Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we are here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or podcast us on iTunes.
Hi there, Mark.
Hey, Frankie. Good
How
morning.
Are you?
He loves when I call him Frankie.
I'm so exhausted. Everybody may not realize we are building a new restaurant, and it is just...
It is. Let me put it this way. Running a restaurant and doing a radio show are the easy parts of our day.
Building the restaurant, however.
Ridiculous. Anybody of you who have done construction know exactly what we're talking about. If you've had to work on your home or your business while you were either living in it or working out of it, you understand exactly what we're going
through. No, they don't. The restaurant is a whole different animal full of nooks and crannies, and everything costs you 2 weeks and $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
But we need resourceful people in the restaurant business, especially in the high end. And our maitre d', Brian, is an extraordinarily resourceful fellow. And last night, very late at night, I had left, and I was in New York, actually, you know, having a cocktail with some friends.
Ernie came downstairs, needed the key to lock the door to upstairs because he was, he wanted to lock the doors because all the construction was done for the night.
And Mark had gone home as well, and the long and short of it, what happens is one of the keys winds up breaking in one of the locks, and the only way we can lock the doors are from the inside of a second-floor restaurant. Now, there's all sorts of expensive stuff in there. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, and what I love is... Rather than call us, Brian figured out that if he went inside, locked up inside, and then climbed out a window down a ladder.
A second floor window. Okay, not its first floor window. Climbed out a second floor window onto a ladder. Was he wearing a fire helmet at the time?
No, he was wearing a suit, and I believe he was drinking a martini and didn't spill a drop. No, I don't know if that's true. But, yeah, the maitre d' climbing out the window and down the ladder, that's dedication for you. That's what restaurant employees are all about.
I got to tell you, one thing you learn in this job is resourcefulness.
Well, you know, one of the other thing is you learn to take your cholesterol medication and hope you don't have a heart attack, because what I find very interesting is the little things that can just destroy you.
Right.
I mean,
destroy a project.
We were working on a different project once, and they're like, yeah, the bathrooms don't meet the current ADA standards.
Oh,
They got to move 2 inches. You got to increase the walls by 2 inches. I'm like, oh, what will that take? Well, you got to move the plumbing stack. That's $15,000.
Right. You got to move everything.
It just didn't fit for a number of reasons. For 2 more inches, I mean, our clients got hosed.
Yeah,
got really
big
destroyed.
Big time hurt.
Well, you know, the other thing that's very interesting that I really enjoy is doing interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And interviewing people for their first job is very interesting. And interviewing people for intermediary jobs is very interesting. Well, a lot of crazies out there.
You got two, you know, things happening at once here. A, you have the college student that you're talking about who's interviewing for the first time. And B, we're in a city.
Yeah.
So you have every type of person who exists lives inside a city.
And we also had some serious resumes, and those are, sadly, those are fairly uneventful interviews. They don't make they're great for hiring employees, but they don't make great stories for the radio. So we get a lot of serious resumes. And if you want to send us one, go to restaurantguysradio.com and email us, because we are looking for quality restaurant professionals. But the guy who showed up today,
he was hysterical.
I do find myself, I'm 40, right? But I do find myself looking at 22-year-olds and saying, kids today.
Francis and I are outside and having a meeting. A guy walks in, and he's wearing a Paul O'Neill jersey and shorts and a baseball hat. And he's like, hey, I'm here to fill out an application. Got an application? Got one? Got an application? Got one?
I don't know if you realize this. He had on Yankee shorts, matching sneakers, a Yankee hat, and a Yankee shirt. And what I was thinking was, I think you'll have plenty of time to watch the game. You ain't getting a job here.
What I was thinking is, have you tried this in your restaurant career? Beer here. Beer here.
You go for a job in a fine dining restaurant. You go for any job. You dress like someone who works there. Come on.
Unbelievable. But literally, this guy, he went in. I was just so tempted to say, do me a favor. Can you just write no at the top of your application?
Here's your application. Please write no
so
on the top.
That way I can save me all that reading.
Oh, my God. And the other guy, there was a guy, Mark, that you interviewed that you shared with me, and I agree. The man was actually stoned.
Oh, yeah,
during the interview.
Absolutely.
You're at the interview stoned.
Hey, dude. Yeah, seems like the kind of place I want to work in.
Well,
yeah, I'm a really hard worker. I really like people. I'm a people person. And, yeah, dude. I really like people, and I'm a people person, and I'm a really hard worker.
And I'm stoned.
And, yeah, dude. And I'm a really hard worker, and I'm a people. Oh, my God.
My favorite line was when he said, "All right, I have a stack of applications of you know 100 people for this job, which is literally true.
Right?
Why should I hire you?" Answer: I don't know, man. Me neither. Well, if you can't think of a reason, I'm certainly not going to try. go smoke another drink.
I gotta tell you, interviews, it's really funny, and it's and if you're a parent, just teach your kid to dress right for an interview.
Bring a pen.
To comb his hair.
Don't be stoned.
Shave if he doesn't have a beard.
Get stoned after the interview.
Get stoned later. Don't come in hungover. Don't come in smelling like alcohol. Don't chew the grape Bubblicious.
My favorite.
Bring a pen with you if you're going to fill out an application.
Guy today, swear to God. And a little snippet.
I mean, literally, this is happening to every day. We get 15 people who walk in the door, and the moment you see them, you're like, I can't hire him.
Guy walks in today, and he's like, hey, dude, looking for an application. I gave him an application. He seemed a little dicey, but I was like, yeah, here's an application. He's like,
dicey. There's a word my parents used to use.
I like keeping my grandmother alive with that. I give him the application, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, can I fill this out here, or should I drop it off? And I'm thinking to myself, considering the way you smell, why don't you go someplace else and fill it out and drop it off? And write smells bad on top of it. But I go, oh, you know, you can fill it out later. He's like, okay, dude, I'd rather fill it out here. I was like, yeah, I got that. So fill it out and drop it off later. Because you smell bad, get out of my dining room. So the guy leaves, and he pokes his head back in. He says, I got one more question. I was like, yeah? He said, can I borrow $5? No, you can't borrow $5. He's like, oh, okay, all right. And he leaves again, and he pokes his head back in the window, and he says, I got one more question. I'm like, yes? He says, how long do you think it'll be till I get hired?
I don't know. I want you to think snowballs, hell.
I'm thinking a long time. I'm thinking a very, very, very long time.
Can you do me a favor? And at the top of your application, I'd like you to write, guy who asked me for $5. We write little notes about each candidate. No, I mean, not about them, but about how they presented. You know, on the top of the application.
Funny story. I got a funny story.
Go ahead, bring
it. Used to be year, going back years. Kyle, who was our wine shop manager, who was a super guy, super employee, manages a wine shop now up in North Jersey. Mm-hmm. He's a friend of ours. We were at his wedding. He's a wonderful guy. But he, Kyle was, you know, kind of the Boy Scout. He actually was an Eagle Scout, I think. I know he was.
He was an Eagle Scout, absolutely.
And that was Kyle. You know, by the book. And Kyle also, like, when pretty girls would walk by, when Kyle was like in his 20s, he'd be like, oh, did you see her? She's so pretty. He's holding Caulfield, right? And I love Kyle. He really did do that, by the way.
This isn't exaggerating.
We had this rule that if you show up without a pen, and you say, oh, can I have a pen to fill out the application? We're supposed to give you a pencil. The employees give you a pencil.
And then we know automatically that person didn't come to the interview to be interviewed.
So we throw them out. We file them in the no pile. Anyway, so this unbelievably gorgeous woman walks in and sits down and asks for an application. And Jorge and Jazz, our two other employees, are like, oh, my God, look at her. I hope she gets hired. And she says to Kyle, she says, do you have a pen? And Kyle says, yeah. And following company procedure, hands her a pencil. And Jorge and Jazz, like, are running from across the restaurant
no!
with pens.
No!
No! Take a pen! And Kyle doesn't realize what he's done. He looks at her and he's like, oh, it was too late.
Anyway, yeah, she was.
I hope you're listening there, Kyle. Hey, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we have with us a guest today. Our guest is Susan Sampson, who is a friend of ours and who has a winery, a beautiful winery, in a very unusual place. Saconnet Vineyards is located in Rhode Island, where you may not have had many wines from Rhode Island, but I assure you Susan's wine is the best wine from Rhode Island, and she established it in 1975, and she's come here today to talk with us about growing great wine in an unusual place. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan. Hello, good morning to you all.
Tell us if having the best wine in Rhode Island is a good thing or
not. It's not only the best wine in Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be classified that way. We are the best wine, of course, in New England, but I think we are the best wine on the East Coast.
Well, I think...
I mean, you know, and I love to do blind tastings against all my friends on the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that people are beginning to understand that you can grow grapes in a lot of different places, as they do around the world.
Do you find your wine surprising people, Susan?
Oh, absolutely. Still. I mean, This is, the winery is 30 years old. Francis, we actually have only owned it for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you're short-timers.
Yeah, we're just short-timers. It isn't long. But, I constantly get the wine from Rhode Island, they look at me very questioningly, and they're very skeptical, and usually don't want to taste it. However, I'm very persistent.
Yes, Susan. I want to attest to our listening audience.
We've known
you
Susan for
are
a long time.
Right.
She's got persistence on her side.
Exactly.
I wouldn't get in your way.
No, well, it's just, I say, you know, what is going to hurt you? Try it. You know, if you don't like it, spit it out, throw it out. I don't get a
throw the bottle at me?
Yeah, stamp on it. I don't care.
So, I
think a lot of this has to do, Francis, with that my history is that I was in the theater before. And I used to audition. And when you go to these auditions, you're either too fat, too thin, too blonde, too short, too tall.
I'm always too fat, Susan.
Never. And so I kind of was used to that. So when people come and say one or another thing about us, I always have an answer for them. Or I say, wait till next year. We've got another vintage.
Right.
I never had that in the theater. Well, I did because I was pretty vintage. But no, but it is true. And even, Francis, where I last saw you at the Winebow wine tasting, Winebow being my distributor in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Washington, they now are saying Long Island.
Right, right.
Yeah, and we're older than most of the vineyards in Long Island.
Right,
that's true.
Well, what's one of the things?
Long Island got the play because Marvin Shanken lives in Long Island.
Yeah.
And he couldn't possibly be serving wines that nobody knew about, right?
What Susan is referring to is that we've always looked to the West Coast to make as having, or in recent history, the West Coast as being a place where the great wines come from, California and the like. And in the last 20 years or so, in this area, but we've gotten a lot more prestige from our Long Island wineries in New York. We have some prestige cuvées out there. And Marvin Shanken, who's the publisher of the Wine Spectator magazine, lives out there, and maybe that has a little something to do with it.
Exactly.
But I have to say, people are very accustomed to the idea, especially around New York, that we do have good East Coast wines, and we have great wines from Long Island. And I think you being up in Rhode Island...
And I do very well in New York City with restaurants, and I do very well with you guys. I mean, it is... mostly chefs who understand, they're looking for a taste, they're looking for a flavor, let's say, and with our, like with my Vidal, it goes so well with seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And what of course are we known for in Rhode Island but seafood?
Right.
But I mean, like Jasper White serves our Vidal Blanc as his house wine in all those summer shacks.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that for years because of the fact that he thinks it goes so well.
So what makes Rhode Island wines truly Rhode Island? Tell
okay.
us about the terroir of Rhode Island.
The truth of the matter, well, my story about Vidal is always, of course...
We don't want a story, we want the truth.
You want the truth. Okay. Shoot, the story is much more fun.
All right, give us the story then.
First the story, then the truth.
All right.
My story is that the vines already go down to the ocean, so the fish and the Vidal vines have met before, so when they're together on the plate, perfect, right?
That's the story.
That's the story. The truth of the matter is that in Long Island, their soil is very sandy, as is Westport Rivers, which is a vineyard in Massachusetts about 20 minutes from us. But the way the glacier went down through Saconnet, our soil is silty loam, shales, and then hardpan.
And what does that mean to the average consumer who doesn't know?
Well, it's got a more of a mineral flavor to it.
Uh-huh.
very much like more, let's say, Oregon, or even the Loire Valley.
And you, and the weather up in Rhode Island, does it work for wine because you have so much water around you that
That's
it sort of mitigates
exactly
the temperature?
Exactly. We are absolutely, we're on the ocean, we're on the Narragansett Bay, and then we have a big reservoir on our property. So we're surrounded by it. I always call it our mother. It protects us.
One of the things that that people may not realize is that especially in places where there are extreme climates, that large bodies of water, and you'll see a lot of the great wine regions of the world are around large bodies of water because it has a mitigating influence on the climate. When it's very, very cold outside, a large body of water, like the Long Island Sound, will keep it a little bit warmer. And,
correct.
And when you have a very, very cold winter, as long as the water doesn't freeze over, it sort of warms things up. And so that's
right. We have, you know, even if we have, like we did, we had a pretty hard winter last year and the year before, and it looks like we're going to have another one. We get snowstorms, et cetera, but they don't last.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like, where you are is in some places in your state where, that snow just stays forever.
Yep, and it freezes over.
And it freezes over, and it's ice, and blah, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
And can damage vines.
I want to talk more about your growing season in just
a
moment.
Well, that is another thing.
We'll talk about that.
We're not even in harvest
Susan.
Yet.
We'll talk about that in just one second.
Okay.
Our guest is Susan Sampson. She's the owner of Secondit Vineyard in Rhode Island, and we'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. Today we have with us Susan Sampson of Secondit Vineyards in Rhode Island. And Susan, just before we cut you off for the last break, you were about to tell us about the growing season in Rhode Island and how it...
It's a different season than you would expect, of course, in California, and we're even later than they are in Long Island. We haven't begun to pick yet. Our bud break is in May, so that's how late we start, and we will probably pick next week for our sparkling, because we do a champagne, and then a week after that we'll start with our Gewurz.
Okay.
And then go.
So we're talking about picking that doesn't even begin until the first or second week of October.
Right.
And just to explain to our audience out there, one of the things that's really very interesting, when you talk about the growing season, one of the great things about wine is that it is an agricultural product. And you would think that, the warmest place where the grapes have the easiest time to grow is always where you get the great wine, but that's not exactly true.
That's not true. Uh-uh.
They
always say that grapes and grapevines love adversity.
Uh-huh.
You see them on hills not only in California, but in Italy. I mean, I've gone up to vineyards where you like have to be a goat, right?
Yeah,
goat
tea in the Rhone Valley, same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm starting to feel a little bit like a grapevine, Susan.
For the adversity in his life?
The adversity. We think the stress in what adversity we have here is this hard pan, because the vines go down through the silty loam, down through the shale, and then they hit this hard pan, which I have seen big machinery not get through.
Right.
And then they go boom, and then they have to spread. So they spread out.
Uh-huh.
And that is where they get that real intensity and adversity, which is good for the grapevine.
Well, and when we talk about adversity being good for a grapevine, you can think of it out there in listener land this way. When a grapevine has it easy, it throws all of its energy into what's called plant vigor. It makes
right.
a beautiful plant.
Oh, it looks lovely.
But it doesn't make very good grapes because
right.
it
right.
thinks it's going to live forever. But when it's terrified that it's going to die, it throws all of its energy into the reproductive part of it, which is the grapes, and that's why we stress vines, and that's how we get great wine, and that's what Susan is talking about in her vines, living in a somewhat adverse climate for a plant, which makes for very good grapes, which makes for very good wine.
So you're really actually being very mean to your
You're a mean woman, Susan.
That's right, exactly. And then we go around and we do things like leaf plucking, which they don't have to do in California, and canopy management is another word that you use in the East Coast more, not, let's say, Virginia, but Long Island, certainly, and we certainly, where we take the canopy off.
We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Taking off the canopy, going like a convertible when we come back. Our guest is Susan Sampson. She owns Secondit Vineyards in, of all places, Rhode Island, and she makes some great wine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we are here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or get our podcast from iTunes.
Our guest today is Susan Sampson. Susan is an old friend of ours and owns the very beautiful Saconnet Vineyard in, of all places, Rhode Island. And we're here talking with her today.
I wish you'd stop saying I do feel like when I'm standing at wine things, I almost feel like I should have a little badge and say, yes, we grow grapes
you
in
should.
Rhode Island.
Well, you know, but here's the scoop. I think that people are now looking for new things. You know, I want a California Chardonnay. Whoop-de-doo. You know, I mean, yes, there are great. You know, a lot of my friends are going to send me hate mail now if they listen to the show.
No, they're great. But, I mean, this is what I say. When people ask me about wines from other regions, I say, wait a minute. Everyone has. I tasted some fantastic wines recently from Michigan, Traverse City, which is right on Lake.
So,
Michigan.
Susan, what you're saying is every wine is beautiful in its own way.
Are we going to sing now?
No, we're done.
Okay. But anyway, no, it's true. And I think people who like wine really love to go out and taste different wines, you know, and experience different wines. They're not the ones who will say, oh, I can't drink that because it doesn't come from California and it doesn't have a lot of oak and
I
found at the tasting, I just have to.
Go ahead, go ahead. It's your show, Susan. You go ahead.
Susan, you're killing me.
I do interrupt a little bit.
You're killing me. Francis talks over everybody all the time. Nobody ever gets a word in edgewise. Great job. Go get them.
You're selling Rhode Island wine. You got to keep talking. But I'll tell you, at the tasting we just did in New York, one of the things that was very interesting is five gentlemen came up all in black suits and white shirts, and they were from a very famous French restaurant, and obviously somebody had told them about our Gewürztraminer, which is extraordinary, and a wonderful Gewürz, and the gentleman tasted it, and then one of them, and then speaking in French, and they assume, of course, all Americans are ignorant. And
right, they can't speak French.
Right, and so I knew what they were talking about, and they were quite amazed, and they would say, you know, and how much is it, and how much do we make, et cetera, et cetera. And then they decided they would taste some of my other wines, and I said I wanted you to taste a Vidal Blanc, because I'm sure none of you have ever tasted one, and they all looked at each other and right, they never tasted one, and they tasted it. Well, I could see the shock on their faces. And they said, what is this? And I said, well, it's a French-American hybrid, which to them means no. And I said, we think it's the most wonderful grape. We do four different wines from it, but this is my Vidal Blanc. And they said, you know, and then they were talking among themselves, saying how extraordinary it was and what they could do with it. And then they asked the price, and I told them, and they said, oh, but it's so cheap. I don't know how we could sell it. And I thought, well, kids, you know, Annie Rosenzweig at Arcadia used to sell it for $8 a glass, and she paid $5 a bottle.
Never say that again. Never say that again, Susan. We're the restaurant guys. We're the ones who own restaurants. Quit it.
I know.
Here's the deal, though. I mean, what I find...
But you guys don't do that to your customers.
No.
I'm sure you do.
What I find is that people are looking for wines from new places. I think people want to be excited. And I think that when people are open-minded, I think there are people who are listening to the show, and I hope there are people listening to the show who say, a wine from Rhode Island, I have to try that.
Right.
And
right.
We're going to put the link up on our website. Everyone should know Susan is not a sponsor of the show. She's just a friend.
An old friend, though.
An old friend. But the thing is, to try wines from different places broadens your experience. It broadens your palate. And these are some very interesting and very unusual wines. And
I look for that on a wine list. And when I go out many times, people will say to me, I just recently tried a Sauvignon Blanc from Mendocino in California. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the waitress said to me, why would you do that? And I said, one, I've never heard of it. I don't know the vineyard. It must be this boutique. And I said, because I have never tasted it.
And and if you trust a place, and we hope that when people come to us, they trust a place, and
of course, see
a wine from an unusual place, that's the wine I want to try.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, Susan, one of the things that you must combat all the time, and you have to admit, there are a lot of people making some not very good Vidal Blanc on the East Coast.
That's true.
And that's one of those things that when you do make a good wine out of Vidal Blanc, that you constantly must be combating.
Exactly. I am. And I think there are a lot of people making Vidal who are still young at it, so they don't understand how to deal with the grape in their area.
Right.
The Vidals are very different. I mean, when you taste them down in, let's say, Virginia, which is a lot hotter,
mm-hmm.
or warmer, I should say, they're very, very sweet.
Right. I mean, most of our listeners, I'm sure, have never heard of Vidal Blanc. It's
a French-American hybrid. It is a combination of either Trebbiano or Uni Blanc, and then a lot of XYZZ, you know, all those.
Let me break this down to if you, you know, people who aren't really into the botany of the whole thing. There are basically two schools of grapes in the world. There's Vitis vinifera, which comes from Europe. Those are the European grapes you may recognize. Chardonnay, Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah, all of those are Vitis vinifera. Then there's Vitis labrusca, which are the types of grapes that grow in America, Concord, Catawba. And they're very plentiful, and they're very hardy. Unfortunately, they don't make very good wine. There are some that do, but most of the Native American grapes don't make very good wine. There are a few hybrids, and Vidal Blanc is a hybrid of a European grape and an American grape. And they do very well, especially in the cooler climates and the soils of the East Coast.
Well,
and so that's what Susan's doing.
Most people are beginning to know, Francis, about Vidal because it's ice wine.
Francis?
Right.
You know, the one in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
We make a nice wine from it. That's something that is getting Vidal. And I always say it's not a hairdresser and it's not an author. It's a great grape that grows in Scotland.
Yeah. Let me ask you. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was just going to comment how much of an egghead Francis really is.
Because the explanation, there are people out there who want to know that stuff.
We all
care
about Vitis labrusca, absolutely.
Tell us about ice wine, Susan. People, I think that's a very interesting story. And you make an ice wine. Tell us how it's made.
Ice wine is made from grapes that have been either frozen on the vine or frozen.
Uh-huh.
And then, like vin glacé that is done by Bonnie Doon.
Bonnie Doon, mm-hmm. Bram.
Okay, our ice wine is made from grapes that had a heavy frost.
Uh-huh.
They're not frozen.
Mm-hmm.
We pick them, we leave them on their stems, and we put them in lugs, which are big, like bus buckets.
Uh-huh.
We take them over to a cranberry farm, which is about 20 minutes away, and we freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
They stay in the freezer till February when we have cleaned up the cellars and are ready to deal with something a little more labor intensive. And we then have an old milk truck that is a refrigerated truck from a dairy around here, and they go get them and they bring them back.
Still frozen the whole time.
Still frozen. So when they go into the press, they are frozen.
So you make the wine from frozen grapes. What does that do?
It's a 24-hour process.
What does that do to the wine to do it? Make them from frozen grapes rather than to make them
it just gets to the very essence.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're getting is there's no water, no nothing. Mm-hmm. It drips from, it's the damnedest thing because it really does. It drips from the press. And we constantly are having to run hot water over the press so that the press doesn't freeze up.
Wow. Yeah.
What a lot of people say, too, is that ice with the water, also some of the impurities will come out of the grape as well.
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty extraordinary. Now, you grow both those Native American grapes like Gewurztraminer and mm-hmm. Cabernet Franc. And
Gewurz is a noble grape.
Is it what?
Is a noble grape.
Right,
I'm sorry. That's what it is. You go the European grapes like
yeah.
Gewurztraminer and Cabernet
Chardonnay,
Franc.
We grow Chardonnay. We grow Gewurztraminer.
Right.
We grow Cabernet Franc.
Right.
We grow Pinot Noir.
And Vidal Blanc is the only hybrid that you grow?
No, we also grow one other. It's called Chancellor.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sure.
And we blend that with Lamberger, which is a grape from Austria.
Sounds like a cheese.
And make, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, when we
doesn't smell like it, though.
Oh, let me tell you what Joetta first said. She's going to grow Lamberger. I'm from Wisconsin. And I said, no, you're not. I mean, I got enough trouble selling Vidal. I'm not going to sell something called Lamberger. And she said, no, we're going to use it as a blending grape. And it makes the most wonderful wine, which we call Rhode Island Red.
Uh-huh.
And so the Lamberger with a little Cab Franc and the Chancellor make our Rhode Island Red.
Well, now, so everyone listening out there, if you want to try something really interesting, Susan's wines are available, and you can find out where to get them on her website, which we'll link to our website. You can go to restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll send you there. And you can find out about Susan and her wines. But I think one of the interesting things we're going to talk about in just a moment, Susan, is how you came to do this and how you wound up owning a vineyard of in Long Island and what you do to
in Rhode Island.
In Rhode Island, and what you do to sort of spread the religion of Rhode Island wines around the world. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest today is Susan Sampson. Susan is the owner of Sakonnet Vineyard in Rhode Island, which was established in 1975, and you may not be aware that there's even wine made in Rhode Island, but Susan's doing an amazing job up there, and she's sort of a legend. She is also a force of nature and has taken over the show from us, so we are now guests on her show.
Welcome to the Susan Sampson Show.
Susan,
with guests Mark and Francis.
I'm a legend. I like
Susan,
that.
Susan, you are a force of nature, and you're amazing and one of the most charming people I've ever met. How did you wind up? You were in the theater in New York.
I was in the theater in New York.
And how do we get from there to owning a vineyard in Rhode Island?
Well, my husband and I summered in Little Compton with our children, and there was a vineyard started by another couple. And my husband also had helped finance a vineyard, which is still going and very popular, called Landmark in California,
sure.
In Sonoma. Yeah. And so you know how a little bit of knowledge gets you in a lot of trouble?
Yeah.
Well, my husband said, hey, I'm ready to get out of the financial world. It's changing a lot. I would like to do something else in my life. I'd like to work with people. I'd like to work with nature, da-da-da-da. And why don't we buy Sakonnet Vineyard? And I said, okay. But I had already worked with the vineyard a little bit by helping the original owners do a cooking school, so I knew it was a little more than your, hello, let's do a show, you know?
Right,
this is not Judy Garland. This is real. So I said to my husband, well, then I better come and help you at least for, I told him I'd give him a year.
Uh-huh.
That was 18 years
ago. Yeah.
So he's 17 rounds into the bonus.
Yeah, exactly, because of the fact that you can make the best wine in the world, and there are some places that are making absolutely extraordinary wine, and nobody knows about it.
Because you've got to publicize it now.
You've got to market them. You've got to really get out there and sell.
You know what one of the best ways to market your wines is?
Be out there and sell them.
No, come on to the Restaurant Guys radio show.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, well, of course, that's why I'm doing this.
Now,
we thought it was your love of us. We thought you came on because you love us.
I love you, too, but it's always business. No, that's exactly how I started. This is really even funny because I knew two people involved with food and wine, mostly with food. One was Michael and Ariane Badaberry, who Food Arts, and the other was Peter Prescott, who used to do Food and Wine. And I had known them in the theater life, in another life. So when we bought this, I wrote them a letter, and I said, help!
Right.
Sure.
What do I do now? And I got a lot of very good advice, and all three of them helped me over the years. But one of the other things I knew as a consumer is that you, as you say, you trust the restaurants.
Yeah.
And if I could get the top restaurants to carry my wine, people would see it enough and they'd think, hey, I better buy some of this.
You know, it has to be a heck of a lifestyle change, though, to go from being involved in the theater and living in or near New York City.
Living in New York, right in New York. Yes.
And then moving up to the vineyard on Rhode Island. What's the lifestyle like for you up there?
Quiet.
My guess is, Susan, doesn't become you.
I go out and bang the drum and beat the, you know, and we do a lot, we try to do a lot of events at the winery. We encourage people to come. So you're working, you know, 24/7 sometimes. I mean, it really does feel like that because it's not the normal weekday work. It's like the theater, so it doesn't bother me at all.
Let's talk a little bit about people coming to visit you. How do they do that?
Well, that's what I want them to do. Everybody, because it is the most beautiful place in the world. And if you are coming to New England, you must come and see us at Sakonnet. We're right on the way to the Cape.
Sounds like an invitation.
It is an invitation. And we are open 7 days a week. I have a wonderful staff of people that do tastings and tours and the whole nine yards, bring a picnic.
Should people call ahead?
Don't have to call ahead.
All right. Is there a place to stay nearby?
There are a few places, not a lot, because we really are in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So usually people end up, if they're going to stay, they usually go over to Newport and stay.
Got it. Well, we're going to put the information up on our website as to how you can go visit Susan Sampson at Sakonnet Vineyards, and hopefully we'll send some people up your way.
When are you coming to visit?
You know, it's funny. I've been threatening to come for years,
that.
and I'm corralled every time I walk by your table.
He walks by the table, I say, Francis, I have not seen you yet.
I know. And I have many friends who visited who have said that it is absolutely one of the most beautiful. And my friends have visited a lot of vineyards, and they say it's an absolutely beautiful place to visit and to taste wine. And it's interesting to taste these different wines that you don't get very often in barrel and to see them on the site. But I haven't made it up there yet. This next summer on my motorcycle, I'm going to take a little run and play a little visit.
Francis. Well, either that or now, because we're about to go into harvest, and this is the most beautiful time in the world. Mm. It is just gorgeous here. We've had, this may be the best harvest because in the 18 years we've owned Sakonnet.
Why is this year so great?
Hot, dry.
Cool.
And not cool.
Hot and dry,
no
she said, Francis.
And no hurricane.
She said hot and dry. It's not cool at all.
Susan, we want to thank you for taking the time for coming down and talking with us. You're the bomb. We'll send some people up your way. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Francis.
Thanks so much, Susan.
Do come visit.
We will. Take care. That was Susan Sampson. She owns Sakonnet Vineyard in Rhode Island. She is in a beautiful natural place, and she's a force of nature herself. She's giving us back control of the rest of the radio show now.
So when we come back from the break, Francis and I will actually be talking.
I had to think of something to say. But the wines are really great. They're really very interesting. We're going to put the information up on our site. And you should go and visit to try the wines. And you should also go up to visit to talk to Susan because she's incredible. She's a font of knowledge and very entertaining at the same time. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today's guest was Susan Sampson of Sakonnet Vineyards in Rhode Island. And she really, you said she's a force of nature? You're not kidding.
Holy cow.
She just came blowing in. There was no eye in that storm, and then she went off to sea. That was it.
Can we do a show tomorrow for just us? She is great. She's terrific, and I really do recommend people go up there. You know, I was having a conversation. She spoke about Marvin Schenken, who lives on Long Island, and Marvin Schenken owns the Wine Spectator.
As well as Cigar Aficionado.
And a couple other magazines. Mm-hmm. But the Wine Spectator is a very influential wine review publication.
Sometimes it's a little too influential, though. People read it as law.
And the scores, I mean, there is some value to scores. And I read the Wine Spectator myself, and I enjoy a lot of the articles they write. But the scores on wine I don't really care about, especially if you're going into a wine shop or a restaurant that you trust. You should be asking them what they think about the wines. I mean, I look for wines that score poorly that I like. I mean, I think that's a great way to do it.
You heard us talk about that in the Robert Parker Show just a few days ago.
I was out with friends a couple of nights ago who are in the retail business, and I said to them, listen, because we owned a little retail shop for a while, a high-end wine shop for a while, and I just can't do retail. I just can't do it. We did it for, 2 years?
Yeah, about.
And restaurants are so much better. Like, I'm standing, you're sitting, it's a list. You're looking at the list that I wrote. You trust me. People come there because they trust us.
Right. You're looking for something new, something different.
I will always
experimenting because you're only buying one bottle.
I remember the day that we were thinking about closing the shop. I made the unilateral decision that the shop was closing. I was behind the cash register, and this woman walks in, and she's wearing a fuzz. And the difference between a fur and a fuzz, ladies and gentlemen, is that a fur comes from an animal, and a fuzz does not. So... while it may be more humane, it's tacky.
A fuzz has polypropylene in it.
Exactly. So the woman walks in a fuzz. She opens the door, and I'm almost bowled over by a pound of perfume. And she walks up to me, and she says, I want a bottle of Landmark Chardonnay.
Which is funny, because Susan just mentioned that Landmark
Chardonnay. With big dragon nails pointing in my face. And I said, I'd known that the Wine Spectator list of top 10 Chardonnays had just come out, and Landmark was on it. I said, I know you're looking for the Landmark Overlook Chardonnay. I don't have that exactly, but I do have other Chardonnays that are very much like it. And she said, she pointed her finger right in my face and the hand on the hip, and she goes, listen, mister, I don't want nothing that don't get a big skewer from the Wine Spectacular. That's it. Closing the shop. I'm out of retail. Back to restaurants. It's all over.
It is spectacular.
You have spent another hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.